Because we do not have a quorum yet, however, the time has expired for us to begin. We were in session, so that is why we are a wee bit tardy in the starting this meeting. But let's begin. So, Representative Anderson, would you like to move? No, of course not. We don't have a quorum, so we can't move it. Representative Anderson, would you like to address your bill?
I will, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. What we are doing here is we're allowing for SNAP benefits to be used at local food markets for individuals, low-income families, with the intent of helping them purchase healthier foods. And this has actually been done as a pilot project. Blue Cross Blue Shield did a pilot project on this. I believe it was in the Fergus Falls area. And then also Hunger Solutions has done a pilot project on this. And I have some testifiers here that would like to speak to the results of their efforts and how this will help families hopefully eat better. And that obviously will reduce costs in health care for the state. So with that, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to have my testifier speak.
Please do, Representative Anderson. And for the record, identify yourself.
My name is Colleen Moriarty, and I'm the Executive Director of Hunger Solutions Minnesota.
Mrs. Moriarty, welcome.
Thank you.
You may begin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just want to thank you for inviting us here today to talk about this important work. Increasing the access to healthy and affordable food is in the best interest of all Minnesotans, including low-income Minnesotans. Public nutrition and education programs that incentivize healthy eating are a tremendous resource to hunger relief efforts. Despite a recovering economy, SNAP enrollment has not decreased significantly, currently standing at 495,000 participants in our state. Healthy Eating at Home is a proven program based on Market Bucks, a partnership between Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Center for Prevention, and the Department of Human Services since 2011. There are similar programs nationwide. We are asking for a $1 million annual appropriation to the DHS budget. This would mean $10 vouchers for fresh fruits and vegetables for SNAP participants to use their benefits at farmers markets. This bill would approximately allow 90,000 vouchers to be used at those settings. SNAP use at farmers markets has grown 240% between 2011 and 2013, a 14% increase in 2014. In 2014, there were 59 markets, half in the metro and half in greater Minnesota.
Mrs. Moriarty?
Yes.
Pardon my interruption. We do have a quorum, so I'd like to officially call this meeting to order. And I need a motion to accept the minutes. So moved by Representative Halverson. Second. Second by Representative Loeffler. Pardon? No, we don't second anything. Exactly, Representative Liebling. Thank you. All in favor say aye. Opposed? Aye. Motion carries. All right, Mrs. Moriarty, you may continue.
In these sites, which handled EBT transactions on the SNAP card, saw $185,000 purchases of fresh fruits and vegetables, or over 4,500 unique visits, and $71,000 in redeemed in Market Bucks that were made possible by Blue Cross Blue Shield. This is an integral step to address healthy food in Minnesota and supplement the emergency food system. It will help low-income families and farmers make the best use of federal dollars. It's a wonderful example of a partnership between agriculture and poverty programs, as outlined in the Farm Bill. Hunger Solutions has a 15-year track record of distributing grants through DHS and OEO for food shelf appropriations. We assisted with the nutrition education program at the Children's Defense Fund for the St. Paul Freedom Schools. We saw an 85% participation and heard comments from our from the participants in the program like, because of these Market Bucks, I have more fresh produce in my home and bridging the gap in my summer budget. The program is supported by a wide array of organizations, of which there is a list available of all the organizations within the state of Minnesota who are confirming their support for this work. This list includes healthcare systems, religious and faith organizations, of which we have a representative here today, and the Minnesota Partners to End Hunger, which include all the major hunger relief agencies in the state. I just want to close with a final comment from someone who called the Minnesota Food Helpline, which is operated out of Hunger Solutions, and takes calls from every county in the state every day to help them access the kinds of resources that they need to meet their hunger needs. The caller said, "I feel better, I've lost weight, I gained muscle, and I have more energy, and it's directly related to the program and my being able to use my EBT card at farmers markets. Even my family has noticed a change. I feel so positive about being in an environment and being a part of the community. I don't feel stigmatized or looked down on. I enjoy talking with the vendors and looking around at options, which makes going to the farmers market a social engagement. Not to mention after SNAP cuts, it's a really nice way for me to have more money to spend on fresh food. Thank you for your support and your willingness to listen." We also included an infographic that describes exactly how the process would take place.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Moriarty. I'd like to move House File 532 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill.
Do you mean 352?
Let me get my glasses here. Yes, thank you, Representative Anderson.
I mean, still want somebody to say my bill didn't get moved.
Darn, old age. Well, it's better than the alternative. Yes, of course. 352.
And, Mr. Chair, this plays very well with your fitness bill that you have. This is just another component of people having healthier lives. But I do have one other testifier, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all, and thank you. It does fit in very well with my fitness bill, so thank you for recognizing that. And Mr.
Krikova, representing Mazon. I live in Edina. I'm on the National Board of Mazon, a Jewish response to hunger. Mazon is a national anti-hunger advocacy group. We work to ensure that hungry people have access to nutritious food today and to develop long-term solutions so that nobody goes hungry tomorrow. I also co-chair the Mazon Advocacy Project in Minnesota. Mazon does not organize state chapters per se, but we do work with partner synagogues in the state and with other anti-hunger organizations like Hunger Solutions to support state programs that reduce hunger. We do support HF 352 to establish a healthy eating here at home program in our state. We think it's appropriate and appreciate that the bill has bipartisan support and is supported by rural and urban legislators. The program will achieve three important benefits for low-income Minnesotans. It will enhance food security by extending their purchasing power when they buy food at a farmer's market. It promotes healthy eating by providing an incentive to buy food at a farmer's market where they will have greater access to fresh and locally produced food. And it supports local farmers who produce food and market food in the state of Minnesota. The concept for this proposal, as Colleen mentioned, has a proven track record of success. It's based on a demonstration project called Market Bucks, funded by Blue Cross Blue Shield. And last week I was fortunate enough to attend a National Anti-Hunger Policy Conference in Washington, D.C. There I heard of a case study of a similar program in Michigan. The results from that program I thought were very impressive and worth noting. 93% of the SNAP recipients reported eating more fruits and vegetables. 83% reported buying fewer low-nutrition, high-calorie snacks. And 93% report favorable price, quality, and selection of products when purchased at a farmer's market. It's an example of the kind of practical, results-oriented, common-sense programs that can have an impact on reducing hunger in our state. Mazon is pleased to join Hunger Solutions and the Partnership to End Hunger and the Healthy Kids Coalition to support this bill. And thank you for letting me testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Krikova. Appreciate it. I also see on the desk is an amendment. Representative Anderson, is this your amendment? Would you like to offer this?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is my amendment.
And then I will move the amendment to, 352A1 amendment. And if you'd like to address your amendment, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I have some folks here that can address that, and I don't have a copy in front of me. Let me grab it. Oh, the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair?
A1 amendment, correct.
Actually, this is the agency amendment. Department of DHS folks came up to me beforehand and wanted to do this. I know that this didn't meet your, I don't think this one met your 24-hour rule. It did? Okay, so this one's okay. All right, I wanted to make sure. So what this is doing is it just is deleting Minnesota and inserting either in-state or federal law. So the SNAP benefits, it applies to state or federal law and makes it just more clear. And this was something that the department had wished for. And so that's, it's very technical in nature. So,
very good. Members, any questions on the A1 amendment? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, members, question? Representative Liebling. Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anderson, I think this is a good bill. I know one of my local farmer market, they appreciate the fact that they can use EBT to get good Minnesota-grown produce. And I think it supports our farming community as well. And so I'm wondering whether you might want to consider where you have the grocery store inclusion and the request to the federal government on lines 2.18 to 2.22, if you might want to add Minnesota grown in front of healthy produce at lines 2.21. So that it continues to have that partnership of supporting our Minnesota farmers along with families who need access to Minnesota-grown products.
Representative Anderson, Ms. Moriarty.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, Liebling, and the members of the committee, while we had had some original discussions about inclusions of Minnesota-grown, in the request for a waiver from the USDA, I believe that in the department would have to verify this, but we don't. We want it to be to not get into the issue of choice. And if we specify a certain type of product, we might get included in the waiver into the issue of dealing with SNAP choice. And so we decided that it would be more generalized into fruits and vegetables. However, we do support totally the Minnesota Grown program, and we just didn't want to have it only be Minnesota Grown.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, Mr. Chair, and to the advocates for the bill, my understanding is that their basic SNAP benefit, this would not change at all the current situation where they can pick up, you know, tangerines from Florida, whatever, under their basic one. This is just dealing with the voucher. And the voucher is an extra. It's an add-on. And to me, saying we'd like to give our Minnesota farmers a little extra add-on in and it helps our grocers. Well, I know have been done a wonderful job of promoting because it's a value to many people when it's a Minnesota-grown apple or it's a Minnesota-grown tomato or whatever. And that it would, if you're trying to parallel the experience that people who would be going to a farmer's market would have, it's also about that contributing to our rural economy. So I would really like you to further consider that and maybe get back to me before we put together the final bill. Because I do think the underlying program would still have all of that choice. It would just say for this extra voucher, we're going to support our Minnesota people.
Representative Loeffler, I have a question, or maybe to the author. If that was the case then, and there wasn't a Minnesota-grown produce, because they go fast, I know at a grocery store, we choose that first, then would this allow that individual to purchase a non-Minnesota-grown in the advent of no Minnesota-grown produce available?
Well, and Mr. Chair, I'm happy to work with Representative Loeffler on this language. I think that we also need to consider, are there Minnesota-grown products that don't have the certification of being Minnesota-grown, and are they going to be precluded from participating in this? And I think that that would be a disservice to the farmers in Minnesota that actually do it. They just haven't taken the time or the effort to be certified as Minnesota-grown. So I think there's a lot of issues that we probably need to delve into, but like I said, I'm happy to work with Representative Loeffler to that effect.
Very good, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and perhaps Representative Hamilton will want to join us in this problem solving because he probably knows. I didn't even know there was a certification program for Minnesota Grown. I just see the signs in my local grocer.
Well, since you mentioned Representative Hamilton's name, he gets to respond, but he is on for a question. So, Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Chair Anderson, for bringing this bill forward and the thoughtful debate as well. This is something that I strongly support, and being the Chairman of Agriculture Finance, we're working on some bills as it pertains to urban agriculture as well to encourage people to be involved in ag. One of the concerns that I may have, and I fully understand, Representative Loeffler, where your intent is in going with this, but I also know, visiting the markets down here on University and whatnot, and many of my friends who are Hmong that will go to these markets as well, there's various products there that they purchase. They go and they purchase that we do not grow in Minnesota. And I wish I could remember the name of that fruit that's very, very popular as well. And so I don't want to discourage individuals. These are very nutritious items as well, and I don't want to discourage people from that. So I can't directly answer your questions and the voucher piece as well, because I understand or I support your intent, because that's what we want to do, but I don't want to inadvertently discourage people from buying some of these other very nutritional products that may be coming in from other countries as well.
Very good. I guess you still have the floor, Representative Loeffler.
No, all right. Recognize.
See, I have a question, Representative Anderson, to the author. Just a two-part question. I'll pause after the first question. Seeking the waiver from the federal government for approval, how likely is that?
Mr. Chair, we all the time are seeking waivers from the federal government. It's up to the feds and what they decide. So this is a step in the right direction, and hopefully our congressional delegation, our U.S. senators, will help us out with that.
Very good. And the reason I ask that question is because, according to the SNAP, a individual who qualifies cannot go into the store, and correct me if I'm wrong, anyone that knows that, and get a pre-prepared meal. Often we know that in this hectic daily lives of us coming and going, picking up the kids and, you know, just trying to manage life and get meals on the table, sometimes going into the grocery store and picking up a prepared chicken that I do at Colburn's is a quick, easy way and a healthy way to feed the family. But according to my knowledge, they are not allowed to do that with SNAP. And I think that should be changed. I'd love to, maybe that's a different bill, Representative Anderson, or an amendment to, you know, I don't want to muck up your bill, but think about it. Oh. Go into the grocery store, grab a prepared chicken or turkey. They're delicious, rotisserie, healthy, some salads and fruits at the deli, but they can't get prepared. Preposterous. It's really preposterous.
Mr. Chair.
Are you guys hungry?
Yeah.
Well, let's get done in a snap, and we'll get to lunch. So, have any, was that a bad pun?
Yes, it was.
Do you have anything to say on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, actually, we can't, as I understand it, we can't change the federal guidelines on what qualifies and what doesn't qualify. So that would be an issue that would have to be determined by our congressional delegation. But now I have the smell of that chicken in my head right now, so thank you very much.
I'll say that. You're welcome. And then lastly, on the bill, what qualifies for healthy produce? I mean, I suppose there'll be is there going to be a list of what's healthy or not, or just...
Mr. Chair, if it's a fruit and vegetable, it's eligible for SNAP benefits. The federal has a whole list of what qualifies and what does not qualify, and be happy to provide that to you or to the committee if you wish.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Anderson. No, I'll take your word for that. Great bill, by the way. It's very healthy and a good healthy discussion. And next up by Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Anderson, for bringing this bill forward. I've been aware of this program for a long time because Blue Cross and Blue Shield is in Eagan and has been partnering with our local farmers market. I did want to get back to the health underpinnings of this bill and what it does so that we all are connected to kind of what change we're seeing in the way we deal with hunger insecurity or food insecurity in our society. And early on, we found a way to make calories really cheap, and we very often were finding that we were providing folks who were food insecure with what I think of as cast off things from your pantry that you might not want, things that aren't particularly healthy. Every college student lived on ramen noodles for a fair amount of their time. But if that becomes a way that you're raising your kids, and I believe that it's near 40% of the people who are getting SNAP benefits are children, if I remember correctly. I'm getting a nod from Ms. Moriarty. That really has an impact on long-term health. It has an impact on brain development. It has an impact on the way that we learn how to nourish our own bodies as we grow up. And so I think that this is really important, that we are really getting to a significant health issue with the way that we're treating food insecurity, so that we are not treating it with empty calories and full bellies, but we're treating it with the ability to make smart, healthy choices for your family, which as a parent everybody wants to do. So I really appreciate this change going forward in the way that we are tackling this issue.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Any response?
Now I have the smell of ramen noodles. I'd like to go back to the chicken.
Yeah, I think I have to say I don't think I've ever had ramen noodles.
What?
Spam, though. Spam. Okay, anyone from the audience would like to speak on this bill? If not, any other questions for members? No. See, people are hungry. Uh-oh. Hey, your question holds them back from that turkey. Representative Schoen.
I had lunch. Yeah. Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I was wondering if food packaging might be pertinent to this at all. Since we're going to add to this, we should make sure that we're feeding the kids that they have safe food packaging. And not, no? Oh, maybe we can talk about that in a Toxic Free Kids Act or something like that.
No. All right, Representative Schoen. Your friend, Representative Zerwa, says no.
Oh, so we'll talk about this.
No, the good question, but we'll issue.
It should be safe.
We'll talk about it. It's a safe.
Make sure it's safe.
Yep. So at this time, I renew my motion for House File 352 to be laid over for possible inclusion of the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. Oh, as amended, of course. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we'll be happy to have some leftovers of that turkey after you're done.
Chicken.
Oh, chicken. Well, they have turkey, too.
Chicken.
Okay, our next bill is... Yeah. All this talk of lunch. Representative Freiberg has a bill, and we need someone to move his bill. Representative Liebling moves House File 525 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. So, Representative Freiberg, if you would like to present your bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Several of you already heard this in HHS reform, so I'll keep my comments brief. The bill relates to people with multiple complex health issues. It would allow North Memorial, which is in my district, to continue to expand the work they've been doing over the last few years around accountable care organization modeling in the Medicare and Medicaid context. It would allow North Memorial to partner with a third-party administrator and to bid in the 2016 Medicaid procurement process. North Memorial began managing contracting risk and care coordination with Medicaid populations when the legislature turned to North Memorial, HCMC, and Regions Hospital to implement the coordinated care delivery systems population when the legislature eliminated GAMC. So I have a couple testifiers.
Yes, Representative, thank you. If your testifiers would introduce yourself and to whom you belong to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dr. Kevin Carlson. I'm the Chief Medical Officer at North Memorial Healthcare. I'm here to answer any questions and offer up anything that I can to help move this forward. North Memorial has been active in every legislative opportunity that we've had, moving bills forward. We participated in the CCDS program, successfully offered savings from that program. We were participants in the IHP program, and that led to our considering the fact that we've had to build infrastructure. We've got medical homes in all of our 15 clinics. We have created the community paramedic program, which was specifically called out by the governor and is in a press release after the IHP results came in. And we've also built care coordination and other characteristics over the last few years that have helped us manage the costs of these patients much more effectively than we had previously. We would like to be able to offer that program to the state moving forward, and this would allow us to directly provide those savings back to the state.
Very good. Thank you, Doctor.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jason Rusinak, and again, I'm here to offer our support for this and also answer any questions that you have regarding participation in this program and prior programs as well.
Very good. Thank you. We have an amendment as well. So, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and that amendment was prepared in consultation of Hennepin County and North Memorial, and we have since gotten some advice from DHS that maybe they aren't as comfortable with the language, and so we need to continue on some discussions, as was discussed in the Reform Committee. We, several years ago, authorized Hennepin County to establish a unique pilot in which they coordinate not only health care, which is, you know, North Memorial is looking at, but also the human services, the social services, for people with complex needs, maybe mental health needs, needs help in finding housing and access to jobs, those sorts of things, and so that we could share information across the human services and health system to really provide truly integrated and coordinated care. And it's having some really amazing results that have gotten some national attention. And our concern when this bill was first proposed is that obviously there's some overlapping service areas, and we need to just kind of make sure that our pilot doesn't, that's in a multi-year pilot with an evaluation program, isn't jeopardized by this. And I think the intent of everybody is to try and keep working together to make sure that it all fits with what's going on with DHS and their bidding process, as well as what's going on in that unique pilot project that is in a, I don't know, I think third year, I'm not quite sure. So anyhow, I'm not going to offer that amendment. I'm just alerting the committee that discussions continue.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions. The first for the testifier about, I'm looking at your title, and you know, you have responsibility for population health. So, and this probably relates to what Representative Loeffler is talking about, but can you just help me understand a little bit what you view as the population when you think about North Memorial? What would be in your population outside of your population?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy. we're specifically targeting the Medicare, Medicaid populations that are in our service areas, and it'd be all comers, basically. We're contracting. The attempt would be to allow us to contract with the state to manage those patients in a different format, where we can hopefully coordinate their care better and move them around. So I don't, as far as overlap, there's more patients than all of us can care for repetitively. So I think there's plenty of room for all of us to work with this. The opportunity is just coordinating. We know that the top 5% of these patients create 80% of the cost. And through our CCDS work, we found out that by coordinating that care more effectively, we kept them out of the hospital, which was a big cost center for health care. So if we can manage them more effectively, manage the transitions, provide resources in the community in a cheaper care setting for them, and get them into the medical home and manage them more aggressively there, we can keep them from being repetitively hospitalized and from landing in the more expensive care model zone.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Just a follow-up, and thank you for that. That's helpful. And this is specifically talking about Medicare and Medicaid, and I'm wondering if you can help us understand if you have a patient in your facility or in your service area who is not covered by Medicare or Medicaid, but instead by a commercial product who has a chronic condition. Are you then also doing the same sort of outreach through your commercial insurers? Are you able to take advantage of the tools that you're learning with this pilot and applying it to your the people that live in your service area who may have the same medical conditions but aren't covered in Medicare or Medicaid, but instead in the commercial population?
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Yes, we are able to. All this stuff is an evolution. That's the short answer. So I don't want to mislead you and say we've got this all worked out, but this is a process. And when we identify high-risk patients in the commercial zone, we also use our medical home for that. The reimbursement's lagging in that field just yet, but it's coming around. We use our community paramedics, despite the fact they don't get paid, to go see commercial patients that we think would help keep them out of the hospital. We are measured, and as the CMS guidelines move forward and we start being penalized for having readmission rates, we are incented to try to develop the behavior to prevent some of that. And so we use our community paramedics as an example to do that. Our home care also does that on a regular basis. We put the folks that have multiple medical concerns and complex medical problems into our medical home and manage them in that way. so far. I can't tell you the results of that as well as I can for the Medicare Medicaid population because we've been measuring those as a part of all this process, but we'll have that information by the end of this year.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one follow-up question, and this might be for the author of the bill, but I'm looking at the consolidated fiscal note, and they've changed the format of these, so you know I might be missing something, but it looks to me on the first page that there's neither recognized a cost or a savings to this program. And if you don't have the fiscal note, Representative Freiberg, we can talk offline, but one of the hopes for this notion of accountable care and care management is that there would both be a savings to the providers, the hospital in this case, and to the state. And so as we're moving forward with these pilots, if I'm understanding this correctly, and so correct me if I'm wrong, if there's not showing yet a savings for the state, is that because we don't have enough data underneath us yet to understand how this is working in order to demonstrate that shared savings?
I'll try to do the best I can. Buck Ryder, excuse me. Thank you, Representative Murphy. The intent would be that the savings is offered. We would be given a patient pool that we're responsible for, and we deliver that. We contract with the state for make a bid, a competitive bid for that patient pool, and then the state is guaranteed that rate. So if we go over that rate, it's at our risk or our loss.
Right. Representative Murphy.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe what I need to do is go offline and talk to the person who drafted the fiscal note to understand this. When we worked in 2007 and 2008 and then 2010 on the restoration of GAMC, a lot of these ideas that we were talking about, which I do think will demonstrate savings and better care and better outcomes, were so novel at the time that the department wasn't really able to give them a fiscal score. And I'm wondering now, this many years later, if we've evolved along that chain or not. The fiscal note doesn't tell me that story, but I can follow up offline. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Grunhagen?
I didn't read.
Oh, I thought you did. Okay. All right. Let's see. Any other questions? Anyone from the audience would like to testify on behalf or with concerns? Members, any questions? All right. I have a question for the doctor. I understand that this is a pilot, or this program is already being done at HCMC. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so is it safe to presume then with DHS you'll just model that policy, that pilot program, after what they have done, if it was successful, of course?
Right. I mean, I think, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that the program has been successful for Hennepin County. We think we'll be able to create the same or better savings by coordinating, and I think we're all learning as we go, but the lessons that we've learned are pretty much the same. Manage the sicker folks in the cheapest care setting we can and do some preventative things to keep them from getting into the hospital. Hennepin was very effective at that, and we believe we can be too.
And, Doctor, are you already doing that? Is
we
the
are.
Hospital? You're already doing that coordinated care?
We are.
So this will just expand the scope of that?
This would expand the scope, yes.
Let me ask a dumb question. Is it needed? Is a bill needed to accomplish that?
Well, it absolutely is, because right now we're blocked from contracting with the state for those patient pools, and we're automatically in the feeder chain with the third-party administrators or the payers. And then the payers dole it out as they see fit. So this gives us some leverage with that side of the equation to also sort of reduce the role of the middleman, if that's the right word.
Very good. Thank you. Members, any other questions? Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's the issue that we'll have to, you know, continue to – well, and we're all learning about these fiscal notes that are done very differently than we've seen before. Might have to have Doug Berg give us a lesson on it. But if you look on page 4, it actually does have some costs if indeed DHS decides that it needs to be a – for the protection of the patients to be a risk-bearing entity with some of the safeguards and reserves or whatever that we typically require of managed care entities. And I think that's where we're all just learning and trying to figure out, you know, how this would all fit within the existing system. And that's when I mentioned that, you know, discussions are going on. I think the state agency is still trying to figure that out as well. Because we've got a really creative state, And I think we all benefit when we have a lot of people testing out new innovative ways of delivering services and finding ways to get better patient outcomes. It's just that sometimes we have all these different things going on at the same time, and we're not sure what fits in which bucket and which federal authorization and all those sorts of things. And since all these programs are heavily dependent on federal money and waivers and all that sort of thing, we just have to sort it all out.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Well, Representative Liebling would like to renew her motion that House File 525 be laid over for possible inclusion into the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Rather, and nay. Motion carries. Very good. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Your testifies. All right. We'll wait for Representative Franzen to come down. Present her bill.
I have one left. One bill left.
Members, anything? Representative Franzen, would you like to move your bill?
I move that House File 1258 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform.
Very good. You may present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1258 would create a grant program to develop culturally appropriate education and advocacy programs about the importance of organ donation in cooperation within historically underserved communities. This proposal aims to build on and expand the good work currently being done by the Hennepin County Medical Center with their Circle of Life federal grant with a number of tribes across the state. That project is slated to conclude at the end of 2015. House File 1258 would allow that work and momentum to continue.
Very good. Thank you, Representative. You have some testifiers.
I do. With me I have Susan Mao Larson from LifeSource and Barb Danielson from HCMC to provide more information.
Very good. And then for the record, if you would state your name and the organization you're with, and then you may begin your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Barb Danielson, and I'm the transplant administrator at Hennepin County Medical Center. I'm here today to express support for 1258, a bill to establish a grant program to increase donation among underserved communities. I've worked at HCMC in the transplant program for over 30 years, and I've witnessed many hardships in underserved communities. As you know, HCMC functions as a safety net hospital supporting Hennepin County and the state of Minnesota. Hennepin County Medical Center performed the first transplant in the Upper Midwest in 1963, and HCMC transplants about 46% of all Asians in Minnesota, 25% of all Latinos in Minnesota, 45% of all individuals of African origin, and 75% of all American Indians. Nationally, HCMC ranks as the fourth highest transplant center in the last 25 years for American Indians. The American Indian community experiences an excessive burden of chronic kidney disease, and in fact, they're six times more likely to have kidney failure because of diabetes. Transplant is the treatment of choice and the most cost-effective for patients with chronic kidney disease. And minority transplant rates fall far below the transplant rates for Caucasians anywhere in the country. One of the biggest barriers is access to education regarding donation and transplantation. And our mission at HCMC is to provide education for all communities, but we have a deep-seated interest in minority communities. In 2012, the HCMC transplant program applied for and was awarded a three-year HRSA grant to develop a new approach to providing culturally based living kidney donation education. And this was to be delivered in the American Indian communities where health services are provided. The program that we have developed, we're in the third year of the grant, is called A Circle of Learning for American Indians, Living Kidney Donation Education. This is just an example of the packet that we can pass around if anyone would like to see it. However, the learning about this effectiveness is not complete, so I can't leave it with you, but but you certainly can see the package. The education program was developed with collaboration with South Dakota State University. Dr. Farenwald is the research primary researcher, and LifeSource is also involved. The education program was developed and informed with a community focus group, many community focus group sessions, a community advisory committee, and a clinical advisory board. The educational program is being tested currently for its effectiveness with a two-group randomized trial, and each site that's delivering the education has a tribal outreach coordinator who's embedded in the community. They're a trusted member of the community, and they have a connection with the medical team if they have questions about any of the information. We believe that the educational materials and tribal outreach coordinators embedded in the communities will be a lasting value and resource in the community once the project is complete this year. And Bill 1258 would help us continue this important work and would include deceased donation. And it would not only be for the American Indian community, but other communities that experience the same barriers. I've also brought Dr. John Silkinson with me, so later if you have questions, he can help me with those. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Danielson. And Mrs. Larson, would you like to state your name for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Susan Mao Larson, and it's my privilege to serve as the Director of Public Affairs for LifeSource. LifeSource is a nonprofit organization, and we are designated by the federal government to manage all organ donation after death for Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. We also have the privilege of managing and facilitating the gifts of tissue donation. So we do all the clinical processes to ensure that the gifts of donation are received by recipients. A critical component of our work is public education and outreach. As the only organization that manages organ donation after death, it is our responsibility to make sure that everyone in the state of Minnesota has information about donation and the information that they need to make a decision about whether or not they want to be a donor. And that's why this project is so important to us and this bill is so important. It's been really an honor to partner with HCMC, and we hope to continue this work. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, James, who can tell you a little bit more about his role at LifeSource and why he feels this bill is so important. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Mr. Hastings, you may begin after you introduce yourself, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. Hamadaki Api. My name is James Hastings. I'm an enrolled member of the Sist and Wahpeton Tribe. I'm Dakota. I also work for LifeSource as a surgical recovery coordinator. My SRC job is to ensure that surgically recovered organs reach the intended recipient in a sterile and transplantable condition. I'm honored and thankful to be here today to testify on behalf of the positive effect that House File 1258 will have on our communities. I humble myself and ask for forgiveness before I continue. It's not my intention to offend or hurt anyone with my words. I will do my best to speak in a good way. Hamadaki Api's translation to English means hello, my relatives. In the Dakota culture, it is the belief that not just humans, but all things are related. We should share and educate each other for the benefit of the earth and all things upon the earth. I will briefly share with you my personal journey that has brought me to work with LifeSource and organ donation. I was born and raised on an Indian reservation. I grew up being very wary of Western medicine. I would listen to the stories of the elders and what they experienced and lived through. The consensus of the people was not to trust Western medicine. This is part of the reason the Dakota people have historically been underserved in the area of organ donation. Like the seasons, things always change and we have to adapt to survive. There was a time when organ donation did not exist, but as we all know today, advances in medicines are amazing. This was my dilemma, old way versus new way. When I struggle with the decision, I utilize my spirituality. I asked for help from my community. I offered tobacco to Dakota elders and Dakota spiritual advisors and asked them to pray with me. In the Inipi ceremony, I prayed to Wakantaka. I prayed to God to ask for guidance about organ donation. After the ceremony, I felt good and confident that this was a good path to be on to help all people. I believe educational opportunity and a strong cultural belief system can promote living in a good way. Tribes are interested in health benefits for their people and are always looking for things to improve the health of their community. I believe that increasing culturally appropriate education within the Native communities will save lives and give hope to the people. My culture understands that life is a gift and that we need to appreciate this precious gift as best we can. We're only pitiful human beings, but when we work together, we can do great things. I hope that we continue down this good path together and support one another in this great cause. In closing, I would like to say, Wopida Tonka, thank you very much. Midakuye Owasi, all my relations.
Thank you, Mr. Hastings. And certainly we were not offended by anything you said. We were enlightened and grateful. So thank you. Members, questions from Representative Liebling?
First of all, thank you very much for that. That was very moving and very lovely, not the usual that we get to hear in committee. So thank you so much for coming and sharing that with us. My question really goes more to Representative Franson. You know, Representative Franson, first of all, I think it's terrific that you're carrying a bill like this, and thank you for doing that. You know, one of the things we've been sort of struggling with here at the legislature is the many, many requests that we get for individual grants to individual kinds of organizations or certain needs. And we certainly know that there are a lot of needs across the state, and a lot of them come actually in the area of culturally appropriate outreach. And we've heard an awful lot from the Department of Health, and it's really on our radar screen that we have big health disparities across the state. And there's no question about that. And the Department of Health, as you know, has been working on, has groups that are working on this issue on a much broader scale. So I think that what you're bringing to us today certainly fits within that, and it's certainly a very worthy cause. But my question is really whether it belongs here as a separate bill or whether this shouldn't be something, because after all, even I heard it said here that 75% of the transplants of American Indian residents are done at HCMC, but that means 25% are done somewhere else. And of course, this bill would hopefully increase the numbers, and I don't know, shifting the percentages or what, but it just strikes me that we here on this committee or in the legislature, we're not very well equipped to sort of pick who should get and who shouldn't get. And we, in many instances, have sort of given this job to the Department of Health to see how, as a grant program, to see how it sort of fits into the overall picture across the state. Because as we sit here today, and I know we're not making a decision on this today, only to lay it over and possibly have it be in the omnibus bill, but it's difficult for us as legislators to know how this fits into the overall picture. So we would need to know, and perhaps nothing's being done in this area in the state, and we need to start to do something, but perhaps there are other programs already doing something similar or that could extend their reach a bit to do something similar, that could maybe reach more groups or reach more areas of the state. So I really want to more ask Representative Franson, how this fits into all of that, whether you've talked to the Department of Health about how this will fit into what they're doing, whether they would rather see it as part of a grant program that's being administered through the department, or sort of what your thinking was along those lines, Representative Franson. And again, I wish I knew I could repeat the phrase that your testifier gave about, I don't want anything I say here to offend anyone. I just thought that was so lovely, and I hope you take my comments in the same way, because it's absolutely nothing about you or your testimony or the issue or what you're proposing to do, but it is really a larger question about how we in the state, with our limited resources, can best use them to serve our entire state. So, Representative Branson, it would be great if you could address it.
So, thank you, Representative Liebling. So, Representative Frazin, how does this fit in the overall picture? Is that what you want to know?
Thank you.
Representative Frazin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, grants are available to all partners, and I will let Susan Mal Larson explain that. But yes, MDH has been talked to. We have not heard any feedback yet from them regarding this issue, and so I will.
Thank you.
Ms. Larson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. The way the bill is written, it says that the grants would be given to an organ procurement organization, a federally designated one, and a transplant center or transplant centers. And so that does mean it's available to all partners in this work. As I said, we are the only organ procurement organization in Minnesota. We do have four transplant centers in Minnesota, Hennepin County Medical Center, Abbott Northwestern Hospital, University of Minnesota, and Mayo Clinic. So the other 25% of those transplants would happen at one of those centers. We have had some preliminary conversations with the University of Minnesota Mayo Clinic, and the grants would be available to them as well.
Representative Liebling.
Okay, well, thank you. That's helpful. That's helpful, and I know that the chair of this committee is going to have a difficult time figuring out what to fund and what not to fund, and I certainly appreciate your being here. And again, I appreciate Representative Franson carrying this bill. I think it's definitely a very worthy endeavor, and I hope we're able to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Anyone from the audience would like to speak to the nature of this bill? Members, any questions? Oh, Representative Zerwas has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A comment on that. I think, with LifeSource kind of being the clearinghouse for the entire process here, being here and testifying in favor of this, I think that kind of answers some of those questions about coordinating, having a statewide strategy. And, as someone that spent 2 years waiting for a heart transplant, the last 6 months at Abbott Northwestern Hospital in the ICU, it's clear. It's patently clear that there is a shortage, and a lot of it is a lack of information. And you can look at the data, and it shows for certain communities and certain cultures that there absolutely is a disconnect. And I think anything that we can do to help encourage that practice and that behavior, I think is positive. I just want to say I fully support the bill, and I, for one, will be twisting people's arms when he comes to the final omnibus bill, because I think this is a really great appropriation.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Any other questions from members? Representative Schumacher?
No.
Okay. Representative Franzen, do you have any closing thoughts on your bill before we move it along?
Well, just to put it into perspective, there are 123,289 people waiting for an organ transplant. 21 people die each day waiting for an organ, and one organ donor can save 8 lives. So I'd like to do a little background research into the bills that I carry, but that concludes the bill.
Very good, Representative Friends, and I think I have a donor on my license as well, so if those who haven't volunteered to be a donor, consider it. It's a good thing to do. Carries on a legacy. So with that, Representative Franzen renews her motion that House File 1258 be recommended and re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. If there's no further business, this meeting is adjourned.